So over the summer, we are doing a series on Old Testament heroes. It's called Almost Heroes. These are all people in the Old Testament who are basically just like us in many different ways. They're all very human. And on the other hand, though, they often have something about them that points us to Jesus in some way. And so we see through them something of him or pointing to him in some way. So we see ourselves in these stories, but also we have to remember they point to him most of all. Now today we're looking at a man called Jacob, and he shows up in Genesis right at the beginning of the Bible. He lives and dies over the course of about 20 chapters of the story. He's got quite a lot of material. And then he gets mentioned again and again all the way through the rest of the Bible. He's actually the most mentioned person in the Bible after God. That's quite cool, isn't it? It's like, yeah, there's God and then there's me. It's probably what he's thinking. Amazing. Why does he have that honor? I'll tell you at the end. But he's brilliant. I love Jacob's story because he's not the best example. He's not. He's just not that great. He's just an ordinary bloke. And there's one thing I want to focus on in Jacob's life, and that's his very long battle with insecurity. Long battle with insecurity. And that's important because I think it's actually a battle that every single one of us has, and it just comes out in different ways. And what do I mean by insecurity? I've just realised I don't have a clicker. So, Bruce, are you all right to click for me? I'll just do this. Oh, there's a click. Oh, there we go. Oh, yes, it is. Okay, so just as a definition quickly, according to the Choosing Therapy website, insecurity is an overall sense of uncertainty about your worth, abilities, skills, and value as a person, conveying the message that you're at risk or in danger of something or someone. That negative impact of insecurity could be physical, mental, or emotional. Would anybody like to admit to experiencing much insecurity in life? I reckon everybody has. I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up because you might feel insecure about it. But we're going to jump in on Jacob's story at three points in his life, which show us three of his key relationships. Relationship with his parents, relationship with his brother, relationship with God. So the first one, with his parents, is in Genesis 25. Starts with his mum. When the time came to give birth, Rebekah discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So they named him Jacob. Isaac, he's the dad, was 60 years old when the twins were born. As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter. He was an outdoorsman, but Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau because he enjoyed eating the wild game Esau brought home. But Rebekah loved Jacob. So Jacob is born, he's a twin, and he's very different from his brother. Esau is red and he's hairy and he's into hunting and being outdoors. He's sort of a stereotype man's man. He kills animals. He likes sports and tractors and power tools. He's that sort of man. And Jacob comes out of the womb grabbing his heel. Interesting little detail. And it sort of sets the tone for his whole life, because if you read all of Jacob's story, he's always trying to play, he's always playing catch up. He wants to make things happen for himself. He doesn't want to miss out. And he's got a quieter temperament right from the younger days. It says, Dad liked Esau more, and Mum liked him, Jacob, more. That's already a red flag. It's never good when parents have favourites. I've known families where there were clear favourites, and it's just done a lot of damage. When I was little, me and my brother and sister used to argue about which one of us was the favourite in our family. And eventually my mum and dad would hear and they'd come in and try and reassure us. You know, look, we love all of you exactly the same. You know, exactly the same. We love you. And when they left the room, I'd look at my brother and sister. And because I was the oldest, I'd say, yeah, they love us the same, but they've loved me for longer. And always will. I was a horrible older sibling. Even in earliest childhood, there's that desire to be loved, isn't there? To feel like you're worthwhile, to have the favour of whoever raises you. Jacob knew that even though his mum preferred him, His dad preferred his brother. He doesn't have his dad's joy. He's second favourite out of two. I did a bit of reading around this, and there's psychological research on the effects of even perceiving yourself to be the less favoured sibling from either parent. Apparently, it used to be quite common in this country for parents to openly state a preference for one of their children, but less so now, which is, I think, a very good change. And in Jacob's case, it defines him. And you can sympathise, can't you? The desire for love, for approval, is behind every insecurity that we have. It's the fear that we're not loved, that we're not valuable. And we fret about it. We often try and make ourselves feel valuable through what we do. How often did it enter Jacob's head to think, man, I wish I was more like Esau. And then dad would love me just as much as he loves him. And we can become, through these sort of experiences, insecure about all sorts of things. Our looks, our talents, our social position, our career, how good a parent we are. Does my partner love me? All of these things. And it's mostly to do with how we're seen by other people. But I think it's always at root the same issue. We worry, am I a person that's worthwhile? Am I really a person that is worth loving? And then once insecurity is there, of course it comes out in all sorts of ways. Jealousy, fishing for compliments, needing constant affirmation, having to be right, maybe being withdrawn, trying really hard to be liked all the time, having to work every hour of the day, obsession about our appearance, etc., etc., etc. The irony is, I don't know if you found this, the more a person's behaviour is shaped by their insecurity, the more difficult they are to have a good relationship with. Have you ever found that? I think we tend to have a radar for when somebody is insecure. We can tell. And sometimes it makes it harder to be around them. I had a friend at university, and he was a lovely bloke in lots of ways. But he was so insecure about people liking him that he did all sorts of, all the time. He was trying to show you how well-connected he was and how capable he was. And it didn't make anyone like him more, of course. It just made him annoying. And in Jacob's life, you see the whole story that launches from his birth. His particular way of dealing with insecurity becomes, we're not going to read it right now, to scrap for things. He doesn't think anyone cares about him to make life work. So, you know, his dad prefers his brother. So he just goes out and he tries to make life work for himself. You see that through his story. And maybe that has some similarity to you. Maybe you've done well in life. You fought to make it work for you. Maybe you've got a good career, good family. But underneath, you can't shake that nagging feeling. Am I worth it? Am I worthwhile? Am I really worth loving? And nothing you can do can bring that feeling that you really want, the feeling of being worthwhile. So that's Jacob's parents. Oh, these are discussions from Breakfast Church. Okay. Second one, his brother. Story's a little bit strange, but bear with me. So Jacob went out and got the young goats for his mother. Rebekah took them and prepared a delicious meal just the way Isaac liked it. Then she took Esau's favourite clothes, which were there in the house, and gave them to her younger son, Jacob. She covered his arms and the smooth part of his neck with the skin of the young goats. Then she gave Jacob the delicious meal, including freshly baked bread. So Jacob took the food to his father. My father, he said. Yes, my son, Isaac answered. Who are you, Esau or Jacob? Jacob replied, it's Esau, your firstborn son. I've done as you told me. Here's the wild game. Now sit up and eat it so you can give me your blessing. Isaac asked, how did you find it so quickly, my son? The Lord your God put it in my path, Jacob replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, come closer so I can touch you and make sure that you really are Esau. So Jacob went closer to his father and Isaac touched him. The voice is Jacob's, but the hands are Esau's, Isaac said. But he did not recognize Jacob because Jacob's hands felt hairy, just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. But are you really my son Esau? He asked. Yes, I am, Jacob replied. Then Isaac said, now, my son, bring me the wild game. Let me eat it, and then I'll give you my blessing. So Jacob took the food to his father, and Isaac ate it. He also drank the wine that Jacob served him. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come a little closer and kiss me, my son." So Jacob went over and kissed him. And when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he was finally convinced. And he blessed his son. He said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the outdoors, which the Lord has blessed. From the dew of heaven and the richness of the earth, may God always give you abundant harvests of grain and bountiful new wine. May many nations become your servants, and may they bow down to you. May you be the master over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. All who curse you will be cursed, and all who bless you will be blessed." It's quite a long and strange passage, that one. Let me ask you, rhetorical question, how far do your insecurities push you? What do you do or not do because of them? What have you missed out on in life? What relationships have not been as great as they could have been because of insecurity? I'll tell you a little bit about myself at this point. It's been fed back to me that I generally come across as fairly confident and relaxed, and I don't worry too much about what people think. That's probably mostly true. But it hasn't always been this way. I was born and spent my early years in the north of England. My family are all from Lancashire. And when I was 7 years old, we moved to North London. And we lived there for a few years. And then we moved to Milton Keynes for 4 years. So 6 years sort of in the south, basically. And I had a broad northern accent, broader than it is now. And when we moved south, I was really self-conscious about the sound of my voice. I was only 7 years old, but I was really self-conscious. And after 6 years of people commenting on my voice, sometimes mocking my voice, it got worse. And I started to hate the sound of my own voice. Hard to believe, isn't it? And I started speaking more quietly. And I would even avoid saying certain words that sounded more northern. And it made me completely averse to any sort of public speaking. When I was at university, I was one of the leaders of the Christian Union Society on campus, and it was quite big. We'd have people come and give talks every week, and I was supposed to do some upfront stuff, like introducing some of these speakers, and I would do everything to avoid it. It's like a 30-second job, but I would avoid it because I just didn't want to be in front of people. Some of these thoughts do still enter my head even today, would you believe, but less often. And of course, now I'm living in the South again by choice, and I speak to people in my job by choice. So God can and does change these things. There is hope. But everyone's insecurities lead them, I think, to do different things and behave in different ways, things that are not good things. Jacob's insecurities lead him to tell lies. In the story, Jacob's dad is by now quite old. His eyesight's gone. And it was the custom of the time that a dad would pass on the birthright. That was sort of an inheritance, usually to the oldest son. And it wasn't just the money and the possessions. It was a sort of spiritual succession thing. And so Esau is expecting, he's the older brother, he's the inheritor. And Isaac is not happy because it's a reminder again, Esau's number one, not me. But Jacob's mum, Rebecca, loves him more, so she helps him with this devious plan to trick his brother out of the inheritance. This is really not great parenting on any level, is it? Not a healthy family dynamic. But the thing is, when Jacob steals his brother's birthright, he must know this is cheap. It's not real, it's a con. He knows his dad really prefers his brother. He knows he's the youngest, but he's still willing to pretend that he's Esau, to pretend to be someone he's not, to get a tiny sense of the feeling of affirmation that he wants, to have his dad speak words over him that he's always wanted to hear, but never would. He's willing to live a lie, to know this blessing isn't real. What he does is, it's like cheating on a board game, because you want to be the person that wins. Even though you know within yourself, you cheated. It's hollow. It's not real. And the first time Jacob mentions God in his story is to tell a lie. His mum prepared the food, but he says, "Oh, God did it," to make the whole thing sound better. Do you see what happens? Jacob's deep insecurity about his dad and his brother and the comparisons prod him to tell lies. Doesn't have to, but he chooses to. Yes, his parents do share some blame for how this all goes. But Jacob chooses how to respond, and he chooses things that end up causing more damage. When Esau finds out about this, which he was always going to, he swears he will kill Jacob. He's furious, and they don't see each other again for years. Jacob's insecurity messes up his relationship with his brother for pretty much his whole life. Again, how many of us have lived something similar to that? How many of us, because of our own insecurity or someone else's, have got messed up family relationships? How much damage has it done? What hope is there for us? Third relationship, Jacob's relationship with his God. This is where it starts getting better, honestly. During the night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two servant wives, just to be clear, the Bible does not approve of this. This is just telling you what he did, right? His wives and his two servant wives and his 11 sons and crossed the Jabbok River with them. After taking them to the other side, he sent over all his possessions. This left Jacob all alone in the camp, and a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. When the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not go unless you bless me." "What's your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" The man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared." The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. So we fast forwarded the story here. This is late in Jacob's life. He's now got a group of wives. Just again to say, this is not approving of it. It's just telling you what he did. He's got loads of kids. He's got loads of stuff. He's fought hard. He's made life work how he wanted. But guess what? None of that has done anything to fix all of his insecurities and messed up relationships. Just before this passage, we learn he's about to meet Esau again for the first time in years. And he's got every reason to be scared about it. Esau now has an entourage of his own. He literally has a small army. He comes to the meeting, he doesn't say in this passage, with 400 men. And Jacob is a bit nervous about this family reunion, as you can imagine. This passage, let's admit though, it all gets very weird. Jacob, he's moved his family across the river, so he's basically put his family in front of him. Again, great parenting. Between himself and Esau's army, protecting his own back. And then it specifically says he was left alone in the camp. Maybe the first time he's been so alone in a long time. Now you have to know at this point, Jacob was in his 90s. It would be fair to say he is not at his physical peak. And I said this is all about insecurity, and this moment is when God addresses Jacob's lifelong insecurity. And he doesn't just give him a counseling session over a coffee, he literally wrestles him. It's amazing. And then he injures him. What on earth is God doing here? What's all this about? Let's walk it through. The first thing to know is that in Hebrew, which this was originally written in, the word for wrestle is very close to the word for Jacob. So it's like the text says, he Jacobed him. That's what God did with Jacob. He Jacobed him. Jacob spent his life wrestling. Not literally, but he's battled to get his own way. He's fought so it works. He's tried to overcome his insecurities, tried to bend life to his will. By wrestling with him, God is saying, Jacob, really I'm the one you've been wrestling with your whole life. This is the problem beneath your problems, because you're trying to fight with me. The problem is your lack of relationship with me, and you're looking for the affirmation that only I can possibly bring. This whole story is Jacob letting it out as they wrestle, all the hurt and frustration, the decades of pain, and they're there for hours. They wrestle till dawn. God's fine, he's God, he can go on forever. But old man Jacob is so full of determination, he wrestles for hours. It's hard work. He won't surrender. And then out of nowhere, Jacob's opponent just touches his side and wrenches his hip out of place. Jacob is not wrestling a mere man. And now Jacob is done. He can't fight, can't run away. He knows this person could have destroyed him at this point, but he doesn't. But Jacob, even after this is done, keeps holding on to his opponent. And he says a strange thing to our ears. He says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he realizes he's now at the end of his self-sufficiency. He can't make things work out his way. He can't manipulate Esau. He can't run away from him. He can't even stand up properly now. The point is this. If God has put you in a place like this in your life, which I honestly think he does with everybody eventually, it's so that you can see what it's like to get your security from him instead. Remember that Jacob's life was defined by the desire to get his dad's approval. Many of us have experienced similar things. We've always wanted the approval, the love of somebody in our lives. Maybe from a young age, or maybe it's never quite happened. And it's really painful. Well, this story is God's approval to Jacob that is also open to every one of us. All that's happening here is the key to being free from insecurity. When the greatest person that there is, who knows you deeply, good and bad, and still expresses love to you, it's unbelievable. If you know the love of God, you don't need to fish for compliments or hide in the shadows or be devastated when someone contradicts you or dress in animal hair to pretend to be your brother. You already have the love and approval of God. And so Jacob says, basically, bless me. I'm holding on to you. Bless me. In other words, give me your approval, your seal of approval. And God says, does yet another strange thing. He says, tell me your name. Now, here and now, names don't tend to mean quite as much. But back then, your name was associated with your very identity, your character. When God says, what's your name? He's saying, Jacob, who are you really? Who are you? Now remember, when his dad asked him, he said, I'm Esau. He lied out of desperation for approval. He wasn't really himself. Now God says, who are you? And he says, I'm Jacob, the wrestler, the liar, the deceiver, the cheater. That's me. God has pushed him into reality. God asked Jacob his name, not because he didn't know it. He wanted to see if Jacob was willing to say it. Is he ready to get to grips with who he really is? Or is he going to continue to fight? This is sort of, culturally, it's a confession from Jacob. He's owning who he is. It's complete vulnerability. And look at how God speaks to him after a night of wrestling. Your name will no longer be Jacob. From now on, you'll be called Israel because you have fought with God and with men and have won. It's incredible. God changes in this moment. He changes his identity. Jacob, you're no longer identified by how you've lived. You're now identified by how you relate to me. You're Israel, one who has striven with God. Israel literally means God contended or triumphant with God. And you won, Jacob. Jacob then asks for his opponent's name. God doesn't answer him. He's more interested in something else. He actually rewards Jacob. He looks at him, insecure, deceitful, wrestling Jacob, who is now at his weakest point. And he blesses him, which is sort of a way of saying on the wrestling, you're the winner. Now, to be fair, the actual wrestling match kind of ended in a draw. But in a fight where both people are trying their best, a 90-year-old man with a bust hip is not going to beat God. It's not happening. So God subverts it. He instead blesses him. He gives him his approval and his acceptance. And as Jacob walked away with a limp, it says the sun rose. Literally, it's the end of the night. But it's great storytelling as well because the darkness lifted from Jacob in this moment. And he now lives with a new sense of walking with God. So this story is not just that Jacob became weak and vulnerable and then went and found God because he was really needy. Jacob wasn't even looking for God. Jacob was outwardly strong and successful. What happens is that God, while demonstrating his strength, became weak so that he could get alongside Jacob and help him. In competitive wrestling, which is not something I know a lot about, your opponent is supposed to be of the same weight class. Then it's fair. God is not in the same weight class as Jacob, but he intentionally lowers himself. He becomes weak. He didn't put all of his weight on Jacob. If he did, Jacob would have been crushed. God could have won the physical fight easily, but then he would have lost the thing he really wanted. He would have lost Jacob. He lost the fight so he could win the man. And God always does this, actually. The way this story points forward to Jesus is that it shows that God somehow wins us through defeat. He'll choose to lose the fight to get us, if that's the choice at hand. And of course, thousands of years later, after this story, Jesus is crucified with the full weight of God upon him. He takes the full weight of our self-sufficiency, our Jacobness, our sin-infested insecurity, takes it onto himself. He loses, so to speak, to win us. Jacob didn't get the full weight of God on him. He got a small, very restrained touch to the hip to show him he was weak. But Jesus was crushed instead. In a line, here's what happens in this story, and the bigger story. God blessed Jacob, who deserved to be crushed, because one day God crushed Jesus, who deserved to be blessed. God blessed Jacob, who deserved to be crushed, because one day God crushed Jesus, who deserved to be blessed. And you can put your own name into this instead of Jacob's too. I said earlier, Jacob is the most mentioned person in the Bible after God. That's because even though his life ends early in the Bible, he's named again and again and again throughout. All over the place, God calls himself the God of Jacob, or people speak about the God of Jacob. Why is that? Because for God to be the God of heroic people, well, that's fine. But God is God not only of them, but he's the God of people like Jacob. And we're all Jacob. We're all insecure. We all need reminders that we're weak. We all need to wrestle with God. And we all need Jesus to be crushed so that we can be blessed. And it happened. But for now, what would it look like for you to be free from the insecurities in your life? What things would you be able to do? How would it improve your relationships if you experienced more freedom from worrying about your worth? You'll never fix it simply by trying harder to do good things and being successful. Won't happen. You need to wrestle with God in your own way. Have him bless you, just like Jacob. I've no idea what that's going to look like for you personally. Depends what you're insecure about. But I want to suggest two very practical things based on the Jacob story. Firstly, talk to God with brutal honesty about yourself. I want to invite you, and you may have done this before, you might not have done it for a while though, I want to invite you to do what I think is the first step. See where God's wrestling with you, where your insecurities are coming to the surface, where they're controlling you, and be honest with God. You might not even believe in God today, but give it a go. Start speaking to him. Tell him how annoyed you are, that life isn't how you'd like it to be. Tell him what bothers you and discomforts you. That's the beginning of exactly the sort of relationship he wants with you. It's not about pious prayers and Sunday shows. If God is the way he is in this story, full of restraint and patience and love, he's completely safe to open your life to, is he not? Plus, he already knows all your rubbish anyway. But secondly, hear God speak to you with gentle honesty through other people. I shared with you earlier about this thing I had about not liking the sound of my own voice. And that didn't change overnight. It took a long time, and there was lots of things, obviously, that I still have to work on. But one way I changed in that regard was that I shared that insecurity with other people, and they told me how ridiculous it was. And I found out that they shared similar things with me too. Talking to people helps us identify the lies we have about ourselves. There's no record in Genesis of Jacob ever sharing his inner life with anybody else. If he had done, would his life have gone a bit differently? Would he have changed earlier and reaped the benefit earlier on?